Welcome back to another episode of Farmer Soul. It's your host, Kyle. And today, we got another special guest with us. If you can introduce yourself.
Hi, everyone. I am Micah Anderson. I'm a first-year pharmacy resident. I'm a graduate of UMKC School of Pharmacy and the alumna of Jackson State University.
There you go. I think she meant Dr. Micah Anderson. Oh, my God. I think that's what she meant.
I did.
Big Pharm D. You know, put some respect on it. Okay, so nice to meet you, or nice to meet her. So the first thing we're going to go into is just tell us a little bit about yourself, your journey in pharmacy school. How did you get to where you are today?
Yeah, so like I said, I went to Jackson State University. I got my bachelor's of science in chemistry there, and then came to UMKC for the pharmacy program, did 4 years here. My journey, I guess, through pharmacy school, I could just describe it as hard.
There you go.
Yeah, I think my pharmacy school journey was really unique in the fact that it went well. Like, I was involved. I did a lot of things. Mm-hmm. But it was also very hard and probably the hardest thing I've ever done in my life. Very time-consuming, for sure.
I feel that. And what made you go into pharmacy compared to any other profession?
Yeah, so, you know, in the Black community, and especially in my family, there's an inherent distrust of medical professionals. Mm-hmm. And so, for me, pharmacy was a way to kind of use my passion for chemistry and my passion for helping people. Mm-hmm. And so, I really kind of wanted to serve as an advocate for the Black community because we just die from so many preventable diseases, diabetes, hypertension. So, kind of being able to use my knowledge and my platform to give back is why I went into pharmacy.
I love that. I would say mine is kind of the same way. You know, seeing so many of my family members and friends, and they're just sick.
So sick. Everybody's so sick.
They don't want to go to the doctor. I get it. You know what I'm saying? But it's just like,
Come on, auntie.
Like, yeah. Go to the doctor. Get checked out. For me, I would just tell them, like, honestly, it's either you prioritize your health and listen to your body, or your body's going to, you're going to have to listen to it. You know? And I think a lot of times, you know, that fear of not knowing what it could be is kind of what, you know, caused that distrust on top of history. We already know that. But I tell my family, it's good to catch it early before it's too late. Because if you wait and wait and wait, it's going to be harder to do treatment. It's going to be harder to take care of you because you've let it progress so far.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's really important that people who look like us are in pharmacy in the medical field, especially pharmacy, since we're one of the most, like, accessible healthcare providers. Mm-hmm. So being like that face, being somebody that our community can trust, is just so important.
I agree. Going a little bit deeper into your progress or into your journey, what made you want to pursue a residency to begin with?
Yeah, so I would say I'm pretty unique in the fact that I did not work in pharmacy before going to pharmacy school. So all through undergrad, I did research to make money. And then research. In pharmacy school, I did computational chemistry research, which it honestly wasn't that bad. And it gave me so much money in undergrad. I thought I was rich in undergrad.
I got money.
Oh, she said big money, big bands.
We got like $500 every 2 weeks. I thought I was the richest person on campus.
That sounds like a COVID stimulus check.
And I literally would do research, like, I hope my research advisor doesn't see this. I would do research, like, once a month for 4 years. So I didn't work in the pharmacy all throughout that. And then in pharmacy school, I did not work in a pharmacy, not a single day. So I knew that I didn't want to do community. I know what a community pharmacist does. I knew that that wasn't for me, especially after my community IPPE. I was like, get me out of here. I never want to do this. So I think P1 year is when I knew I wanted to do residency. I love working with other healthcare providers. So I knew that I wanted to, like, pursue residency, and especially like an academic medical center where I could work with pharmacy students, medical students, like resident doctors. So that's kind of how I gained my initial interest in residency. And then obviously in pharmacy school, they kind of push you towards residency in a way.
Yeah.
Different schools push you different ways. I think UMKC kind of leans you towards residency a little bit. So.
Yeah. I would say kind of shoves you, you know, a little.
Just a light shove.
You know, a light shove. You know, not crazy, not
nothing crazy.
Crazy.
They do expose you to, like, industry and, like, all other types of pharmacy, community, independent pharmacy. But I do think that residency is something that they definitely expose you to at a very, like, very early in your, not career, but
in school. Yeah, I would agree with that. So I don't know if you said it. What do you want to specialize in long term or after you finish residency?
Yeah, so I'm finishing up my first year residency, and then I'm going to do a PGY2 in critical care next year.
Snaps to that. Snaps to that.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm super excited. Mm-hmm. I love the ICU. I'm passionate about, like I said, helping people. Mm-hmm. And our critically ill people are the ones who need the most help, and is where I truly feel like I'm having such an impact.
I love that. And so kind of break down for me, what does that collaboration between healthcare professionals, what does that look like in the ICU? Because a lot of people don't even know that pharmacists practice or work in the ICU. They think, you know, we're on the front lines, Walgreens, or maybe in the basement of a hospital, yeah. Which is understandable because that's pretty much all that's talked about in pharmacy. But what does that look like in your day-to-day working with other professionals?
Yeah, I can kind of walk you through my day as a resident, mm-hmm. because I think it really mirrors how it'll be when I am an ICU pharmacist.
Okay.
So you come in the morning around like 7 a.m. You work up your patients that are on your service. So this can vary anywhere from 5 patients to 20 patients, depending on the census. Mm-hmm. So you work up your patients in the ICU. We do system-based workups. Mm-hmm. So you start from head and you go all the way down to their toes. You also have to look at things like, do they have a diet? Do they need stress ulcer prophylaxis? Like, are they having bowel movements? Things mm-hmm. that other healthcare providers don't necessarily look at. So making sure you're looking at all their medications, if there's anything they're missing or anything contraindicated. Mm-hmm. So you work up your patients in the morning. Because I'm a resident, I then go talk to my preceptor, right. and I run through all the recommendations that I have. But when I'm not a resident anymore, I'll work up the patients. And
so I'm the final check.
When I am the pharmacist, the big pharmacist, I'm a pharmacist, but like a baby pharmacist.
Right.
When I am the pharmacist, I'll go to rounds. Rounds mm-hmm. usually are like at 9. And so interdisciplinary rounds include pharmacists, you have your attending physician, you have your residents, and then your medical students. We sometimes have pharmacy students as well.
Okay.
And so we round on the different patients. The medical student will present the patient. And then, like, during that time, I can throw out any recommendations that I have for the patients.
Okay.
So we do that on every single patient. After rounds, we do a lot of our monitoring. Mm-hmm. So we're responsible for vancomycin consults, warfarin consults, any, like, gentamicin consults. Mm-hmm. And then we also have to go through and make sure, like, all of our patients' meds are renally adjusted, that their electrolytes are replaced. So that is kind of like what the morning looks like. And then okay. you'll always have like medical residents calling with questions, or they'll like stop in the ICU office and ask questions. So mm-hmm. it's very interdisciplinary. Nurses as well will always stop in if they aren't sure how to like run a med, or if they aren't sure if two of these medications are going to interact. They'll mm-hmm. always like stop in the office. So I think it's a lot of interdisciplinary relationships.
That's cool. See, pharmacies are smart cookies. You know?
You is kind. You is smart. You is important.
If y'all didn't know, now you know. You know, we got to know a lot of information that goes into the patient, not yeah. just, you know, counting pills or yeah. a little side effect. Like, you know, we're a vital part of the healthcare team, like yeah. everybody else. I love that. So what would you say your biggest challenges have been in residency? I mean, really your journey in as a whole, but specifically in residency.
I would say I had two biggest, like, big challenges in residency. Mm-hmm. One would be time management.
Okay.
I left pharmacy school thinking that I could just use my target planner and reminders on my phone, and that was going to get me through mm-hmm. my PGY 1 year. It did not. I learned very quickly that I was extremely disorganized and did not know how to manage my time.
Okay.
Because in pharmacy school, it's different. You go to class, and then, like, maybe every 2 or 3 weeks, you have to study really hard for a test, and that's it. But the rest of that time is really yours.
Mm-hmm.
So for me, working all day on residency and then having to come home and do projects, come home and work on journal clubs or presentations, I was so bad at managing my time.
Yeah.
So kind of how I combated that was, honestly, I utilized my resources. So my residency program director was really big mm-hmm. about helping me learn how to even set up a Google Calendar, learning how to block out my time, learning how to not get, like, super bogged down in things. Because mm-hmm. I'm somebody, like, I will get bogged down in one thing. If I find an interesting patient chart, I will spend, like, 35 minutes reading into it
yeah.
when I have 14 other people to look at, you know?
Yeah.
So, I think just using my resources helped me a lot in that aspect, and really budgeting out my time, making sure that I still had time for myself mm-hmm. were all things that kind of helped me with that. And then I think the other one was imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
I don't think that I knew that I had imposter syndrome in pharmacy school because I don't think there was a time where it really presented itself.
Mm-hmm.
But in residency, I dealt and still deal with imposter syndrome probably from the beginning.
Right.
And it's just because it's so hard when people don't necessarily look like you. And I'm in an institution where the patients look like me, but the pharmacists and the providers don't.
Know
so
exactly
there's
what
always,
you mean.
Yeah, that kind of like thought in your mind where you're like, do I deserve to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Did I get here by chance? Did I get here by luck? And I think for me, just having like mentors and friends and family just kind of pour into me
mm-hmm.
and make me remember that I worked hard to get here. I deserve to get here. I deserve this spot. I am just as deserving as anybody else. So I think imposter syndrome was something that, like, I definitely did not think I had it. I went into pharmacy school, like, oh, I don't have imposter syndrome.
I
don't
need to listen to this. I'm that girl. What you mean?
I don't need to listen to this imposter syndrome lecture.
They ain't talking to me.
I was so freaking wrong. I was so wrong. It's fine.
It'd be like that, though. It'd be like, but you dropped a good word in there where it's like you are deserving to be in this spot regardless of whatever you had to do to get to this spot,
yeah.
You know, you're deserving. But I question that too. And I feel like a lot of minority students, but especially Black students, we have that because it's like, even in school, our professors don't look like us.
Yeah.
Our admin doesn't look like us. And that's not a shot at the program or anything, but it's just facts. You know, I think in this building we used to have two. Now I think we only have one Black professor, but we have a lot of staff members who are Black.
Yeah.
I would just say that. So it can, I feel like it can be disappointing, but it also can be motivating,
yeah.
Depending on how you look at it. But the patient piece is really big. I feel like, too, when I'm at work, whether it's retail, whether I'm in the hospital, in my experience, the instant I walk into a patient's room, they're like, you're the doctor?
Yeah.
Like, you can just see on their face, like, everything, it just relaxes. Because I feel like that level of trust, it just amplified that much more.
It's an automatic trust that you don't have to, like, you didn't have to work for that trust.
Yes,
yeah.
Yes.
And I think it was really hard for me coming from an HBCU mm-hmm. where I was very used to everybody looking like me.
Yeah.
So coming to, like, a PWI pharmacy school, it was definitely, like, a shell shock for me because,
you said, whoa.
Yeah, I was used to the students looking
where's
like
my people?
Me, the professors looking like me. Yeah, literally, where are my people? I don't know where they are. I was like, where are my people? I do not know.
Yeah.
So it was just, yeah, I remember coming to orientation and looking around and being like,
that's suspicious.
Yeah, it's
fine. That's weird.
Okay, nobody looks like me, but
yeah.
That's okay.
Yeah.
And then, obviously, I found Courtney and Alexis and Christina in BSPL, and that was mm-hmm. a big part of, like, me becoming comfortable and confident here, but... Yeah,
I would agree with that. And we talked about BSPL multiple times on this platform, but for those who haven't been watching or who are new, it stands for Black Student Pharmacists Organization. And it was set up by Dr. Essen. She was a co-founder along with another student, Charlie. Yeah, Dr.
Yeah.
Charlie. And so together they formed this organization a few years ago, and pretty much it allowed individuals like Micah and myself, Aya, Maya, so many different people to come together and form this tight-knit relationship. And I'm grateful for BSBO just because
yeah.
I feel like it gave us a sense of community, you know, where even though we're small but mighty,
mm-hmm.
you know, and everybody knows, I don't know, like we stand out like a sore thumb. I'll
yeah.
say that. There's no hiding us, you know. It could be 100 people in the class and you're going to know if one of us are missing,
yeah.
put it that way. So I think having that community was very important. And even outside of school, it gives you networking. It gives you people who, okay, if I have a question about boards or a medication or you just want to talk to somebody, I feel like it gives you that relationship foundation to carry on for it.
I agree. Yeah. BSPL is my family.
Yeah.
I literally reach out to like past BSPL members for literally every aspect of life.
All the
time. It could be how to study for the NAEPLEX. Have you ever done a presentation on this? Can you help me brainstorm? So I think it's just a family and I would not have made it through pharmacy school without BSPL for sure.
That part. Shout out to Essence and Charlie.
Shout out to you.
So I would say going into, or so as a resident, I heard you mention that it can be very busy, you know, trying to, you know, you got all day spending there, then you have to go home and work on projects or work on patients or whatever. How do you maintain that work-life balance in residency?
You know, when I figure it out, I'll let you know.
It's a work in progress.
It's a work in progress, you know? I think that's just trying to get as much done as you can while you're there is something that I learned, because I'm a yapper by nature.
Yeah.
So whenever I have the opportunity to yap with my co-residents, I feel like I do that. And so I've literally had to learn to just put my headphones and say nothing.
Don't talk to me, y'all.
Don't talk to me. I need to like almost put a sign on my back that says, please do not talk to me or I will want to talk back. So getting as much done during the day as you can has helped me significantly with like work-life balance, so that I don't have to go home and spend several more hours working on presentation. So really utilizing some of the downtime where I may want to like scroll on TikTok at work, like using that in scrolling on TikTok at home.
Yeah, I feel that. Yeah.
So I think that's helped me for sure.
So how do you maintain, I guess kind of building off of that, how do you maintain your mental sanity? Because I know like school is a lot, but then you got residency is even more. So like, how do you keep yourself sane?
Yeah, remembering your why
is
a big one for me.
Okay.
Whenever I'm having a really hard day or I'm having like a terrible month, I always try to remember, why am I doing this in the first place? And it's so funny because whenever I will feel like that, I'll have a random patient interaction that will make me remember like why I'm doing this in the first place. Last week I was having a terrible week, and one of our like previous pharmacy technicians came up and gave me a hug in the cafeteria and said, I just wanted to let you know how proud I am of you. And I just think that like things like that, like really matter. And it's like why I did this in the first place. So remembering your why is a big thing for me. And also leaning on your co-residents. My co-resident, Shu, shout out Shu, she has been literally my rock throughout residency. We talk every single day, and we literally just debrief like
you
on
have
the drive
to.
Home.
You have
we
to.
Just debrief and be like, did you think that was crazy? Because I thought that was crazy.
Did you hear what she said?
So we just like debrief every single day. So I really think having people that like are on your side that support you are probably how I keep my sanity. Plus my mom and my dog and just having people outside of pharmacy.
Yeah, I think that's good too. Cause I feel like that kind of helps me now.
Yeah.
Where I'll come home and kind of bring the day with me home.
Yeah.
And I'll talk, because me and my sister live together. So we'll I'll talk to her about it. And I don't know, talking to people outside of your profession, it humbles you.
Oh my God, it does.
Because she's like, what does that mean? What are you saying? And I'm like, oh, God, forget it.
or
sometimes it makes you break down, like, okay, what am I actually saying? Or am I using patient-friendly terms or all that? I think it's humbling, though. It kind of keeps you level, where it's like, okay, I'm here at work, but then outside of work, I'm still Calvin, I'm still Micah, and I wear multiple different hats. You know, learning how to balance that.
I agree. Yeah. I think it's really important. And my mom does that for me all the time. Like, I will be so stressed about, like, an eval that I got on a presentation, and she'll be like, but the presentation's over. So it's like little things like that, like just bring you back to reality and be like, it really is not that big of a deal.
You know, you're right. You're right. It might not be what I want to hear, but you're right.
It's right.
My parents are good, especially my dad. He'd be like, so, but did you complete it? I'm like, yeah. Is it done? Yeah. So who cares? I'm like, I care. Like,
you know, I still care, but like, thank you for bringing me back to reality.
Like, thank you for bringing me back down to earth. But it's needed, though. I feel like any profession, any schooling, like, we all need somebody in our corner who can say, you know what, you did a good job, you did the best you can do, relax.
Yeah.
You know, or because there's always something, too. So it's like, you freaking out or worrying about this, but you got something else that's always due next. So, I don't know, kind of keeping the big goal in mind, like you said, and then moving forward with that. So, moving a little bit away from residency, just as a whole, what are you most proud of in your journey thus far? Or it could relate to residency.
Oh my God, that's a good question. What am I most proud of in my journey? Honestly, I think I'm just most proud of, like, how far I have come.
Yeah.
I don't think that I could, if you would have asked me my freshman year of undergrad, would I be a pharmacist right now? I would probably be like, no.
Yeah.
Like, I just could not see or imagine, like, all of the things that I'm able to do and, like, the small impacts that I'm able to have. So I think just, like, being at this point in my life, in my journey, and just, like, having a career, having friends, having family, like, having both sides of life, which I think in pharmacy school, I was just so focused on pharmacy school that I, like, let different parts of my life slip, I would say.
Yeah.
So, like, I have friends in undergrad that I wouldn't call as much or text as much. So kind of being able to get both of those areas of my life, not combined, but, like, on equal playing fields, is something I'm really proud of.
Good for that. Clap it up for Mike.
What are you most proud of?
Ooh, that's a good question. I would say my grit and determination throughout this process. I kind of was the opposite from you. When I was in school, I didn't focus as much as I should have on school. You know, if you know, you know. And I kind of let my priorities, different priorities, take precedence over school.
Yeah.
But I would say, you know, it's not what happens to you, it's how you bounce back from it. Exactly. And year and a half ago, I was in a spot where, you know, I just got academically dismissed from pharmacy school. I was on academic probation for my MBA program. My parents never knew that, so surprise, that also happened. But I say, looking at me now, like, I started rotations 2 weeks ago or last week. So I'm very happy. Like, I'm very proud of myself for getting back on the horse and for not quitting. That's what I would say.
I love that.
Thank you.
I'm also so proud of you.
Thank you.
You have me very stressed. Because I feel like Calvin, Maya, and I are like my children. So, like, I need to make sure that they reach the finish line. No, I know Calvin has amazing parents, but I also feel like he's my child, too. So, yes. Like, I got to make sure he reaches the finish line. So, I was stressed, but.
Yes. Well, look,
I'm very proud.
At us now. Thank you.
I'm so proud. Thank you. So proud.
Well done. Well done.
We all growing and doing big things. That's all that matters. So, if you weren't a pharmacist, what do you think you would be doing instead?
Oh my gosh, it's such a good question. If I wasn't a pharmacist, I would tell my mom this all the time, but if I wasn't a pharmacist, I would be a librarian.
Really?
Yeah.
I can see you as a librarian, like a researcher type of deal, yeah.
I'm very passionate about reading. Mm-hmm. I love to read. I'm very proud of the fact that I read like a million words in the seventh grade and won a Kindle. So,
good for you.
You know?
I hated reading. I still do.
So I think I would be a librarian. I don't know. I love reading, mm-hmm. and I would love to like incite passion for reading in smaller kids.
That's amazing.
So I think I'd be a librarian. I'd be like sitting at like the Kansas City Public Library checking out books.
Pull up.
Checking out books. So
that's cool.
I think that's what I would be.
That's cool. And literacy is so important too. Like, we need more people, more so our kids, like teaching them not only how to read, but the importance of reading. Because I don't know, like, I look at younger kids now, like, they don't teach them cursive.
They can't read.
They really can't. Like, it's just like,
they can't read.
C-A-T, cat. Like, yeah. Hello? Like, it's, you know, pick up. But it's like, it's kind of scary when you think about it. Like, I look at some of my younger family members or younger friends, and I'm like, ooh, Lord.
Yeah, I'm very nervous.
The future's going to be in your hands soon. And it's
I don't scary. Actually know how can you not know cursive? How will you sign your name?
It doesn't make sense. They don't even teach it no more. But it's like, I don't know how to put all the blame on the teachers either, because, like, where the parents at, you know?
Yeah,
like,
I was going to say, my grandma had me working hard in that cursive book as soon as I got out of school.
Everything.
Yeah,
like, you cursive, had to know. Everything. Like, my parents, my mama especially, like, education was not something she played with.
Yeah.
We couldn't go play. We couldn't go outside. We couldn't get on that phone. When at that age, we didn't even have a phone, but we couldn't do nothing until that homework was done.
Yeah.
She checked it, and it was right.
Oh my God, bro.
Oh, hell no, man.
It's just like, just give me a break. But I'm so grateful for it, though, because I feel like it taught me that discipline of school early on to where I was able to carry that into pharmacy school and my sister into law school. But very, very grateful for them.
Yeah.
Very grateful for them. So what's something that students could be doing now that could prepare them for rotations or for residency?
That's a good question. I would start with rotations, like what they can be doing now.
Mm-hmm.
I would say during rotations. So one, treating every rotation like a job interview, because that's what this is. Like, this is a job interview. This is you putting yourself out there and saying that I could be a resident one day. I could be a pharmacist here one day. So, like, one, treating it like a job interview. Another thing would be making sure that you document your interventions. You make so many like small recommendations as a pharmacy student that you wouldn't even think about, but they are important. And 9 times out of 10, your preceptor will be like, yeah, that's really smart.
Yeah.
And then it happens, and then the patient gets it. So I think documenting that, I used a Word document all mm-hmm. throughout my APPEs,
mm-hmm.
Where I would write down like any small recommendation, even if I recommended potassium for a patient with a low potassium.
I got a story on that, but go ahead.
Even if I recommended something small like that, just making sure that I documented it was super helpful.
Mm-hmm.
If you're going into IPPEs, have a notebook, even for APPs. I had a small little notebook that I would carry around,
mm-hmm.
and I would write down any, like, facts. I call them fun facts.
Yeah.
Any fun facts that, like, my preceptors or the pharmacists or the residents told me, because those are like clinical pearls. Like those are clinical things that somebody is going to ask you in the future.
Yeah.
So always making sure that you keep a notebook like that and write down things that you learn. And you'll be so surprised at the end of the year and be like, dang, I learned all these things.
Yeah.
And then you can use it when you're studying for the NAEPLEX. Seems like, oh, I learned this somewhere. Let me go find the
page. Like, y'all got it. It's already over.
I learned this somewhere.
I really love that. And everybody's actually told me that. You know, I asked that question because I'm on Appy's right now, so I need a little advice myself. But last week, it was a patient, and they had low potassium, but they were on potassium. They had arrhythmias, all this other stuff. And I was like, why don't we do spironolactone? And here's the dose. I think this is why. The doctor was like, I like that. I was like,
It makes you feel like you heart surgery or something.
Literally, it makes you feel like an actual pharmacist. I was like, okay, school might be paying off. You know, I pay attention a little bit. Nothing crazy. Oh, but I completely agree with that, though.
Yeah.
And I would say, too, like, the biggest thing that I'm currently learning, but I have learned, is to be a sponge. To realize there's really no stupid questions when you're out in practice. IPPE, APPE, like, that's the time for you to ask questions, to learn, to get an understanding of something that you might be confused about. I will ask any and every question that came to my mind from my preceptors. And all of mine were very cool, very chill, so I felt comfortable enough to do that with them. But it's like, hey, why does this type of reaction happen? Or what do we do for this? What do we do for that? I work at Walgreens, so I've been working for Walgreens for years, but I still ask the pharmacist questions like, why do we do this? Or can you help me understand this?
Yeah.
And it kind of gives you that deeper level of understanding, that why piece, so to speak. And then you're able to teach other people. So if you know for yourself, people ask questions, then you can teach them too. It's kind of a full circle moment.
I agree. And outpatient, like working in outpatient gives you such a unique perspective, especially when you have hospital rotations, because transitions of care is something that gets missed so often.
Yeah.
You'll have like doctors who won't understand the fact that this patient cannot get this medication outpatient.
Yeah.
Their insurance won't cover it.
Yeah.
So I think like having the outpatient knowledge of like, what does Medicaid cover? Mm-hmm. What does this type of insurance cover? Oh, this patient's self-pay. What do we have on 340B? Like knowing things like that are so beneficial to make sure that patients can go home on the medication so they don't come back to the hospital.
Completely agree with that. And I think too, to add on to what Micah just said, like, So for IPPE, it's kind of picked for you, right? You got the community and then you got the hospital. But APPE, you got a little more free reign. You got to do required sections, but you can pick what you want to go into. And one thing I did for my rotations currently, and the biggest advice I would give, is pick stuff that you either haven't done or not comfortable with.
Yeah.
Because it gives you – there's so many different fields and specialties of pharmacy that really, we don't even know all of them, let alone if you haven't had the opportunity to be in that room or in that space. So I think if you were able to see, like, okay, what does a nursing home facility or long-term care facility look like? What does retail look like? Hospital, all these different things, managed care. And it kind of helps you see the full picture of, like, okay, so they're the middleman for this piece, or this is how they play a factor, this is how they play a role. And I don't know, I think it kind of helps you give better care to your patients.
It does.
Because you know that, okay, I've worked in an AmCare clinic, so I know that they can prescribe this, but they can't prescribe that. Mm-hmm. Or Medicaid will cover this, but they won't cover that. You know, kind of understanding the ins and outs of it all. I think it just gives our patients better care overall.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. Residency-wise, like what you can be doing now to prepare, I think a lot of the preparation has to happen before now.
Okay.
And I think that you've done that. So being involved is a big one for me. Whenever people are looking at residency packets, everybody has always told me that it's like a holistic view. So like, what does this entire person look like? Like, you can have the most amazing grades, but if you couldn't do anything outside of pharmacy school,
what does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean? You know, like, do you have the balance to both have good grades and be involved? So I think, one, being involved in organizations and community outreach programs, which I think that you've done, which is good.
Thank you.
Working hard academically is important as well, which I think that you're doing. You're trying, you're striving. So working hard academically, being like a balanced candidate, and then just making sure that if you need work experience, getting that. I think it was so crazy because going into residency, I think everybody put it in my head that like, oh, you won't be a competitive candidate because you didn't work in the hospital or you didn't work in community. That's not true.
Clearly yeah, not. Look, that's not true. Big PGY that's too. What you
true.
Mean?
That's not true. So yes. Don't let anybody tell you that. Like, don't let anybody say that this one aspect of your application is going to stop you from being a resident, because it's just not true.
I love that. And I want to build off of that, because like she said, you know, they always tell us like, oh, you have to have work experience, or you have to have this, 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 and this, which it's important, like she said, to have a holistic view, have everything if you can, but it's not the only thing, because yeah. residency is, it's graded on a point system, and depending on how many points you hit on certain things, your interview process, all of mm-hmm. that, rec letters, that's going to determine overall, are you the best candidate or not. Mm-hmm. And I've been talking with you, I've been talking with some of my friends, with pharmacists, and speaking of imposter syndrome, like, I'll be transparent with y'all. I have a very, I don't know, like, I'm kind of scared about residency because of my school situation, my grades, and talking to all these different pharmacists, the associate deans and everything, and they're like, you're fine.
Yeah.
You know, and I think you have to get to a point within yourself where it's like, okay, like, I believe in myself. I believe that I can be a resident. I believe mm-hmm. I can be a pharmacist, even if you don't do residency, and excel. Not because, oh, I check every box, but because I deserve to be here. I put the work and the time in to be in this position.
Yeah.
It is scary though. I'm trying to actively work and grow through that, but it's really just getting out of your head where it's like, stop saying that to yourself, you know? So
I feel like it has to start with you.
Yes.
And you have to believe that you are deserving, because you are deserving and you have worked hard. And yeah, there may have been like things that got in the way, or like maybe things that you could have done better. Mm-hmm. But at the end of the day, this is who you are, and you're a good candidate, and you'll be fine. And I just believe that, you know? I believe that. I don't think that one thing defines you.
Yeah.
Like, one thing does not define you. Can you sell yourself is the biggest thing that right. I think. Like, you can be the best person on paper, but if you go in an interview and you are stumbling over your words, you can't make a logical thought, then it doesn't matter how you look on paper, because a lot of what pharmacy is communicating with others.
Mm-hmm.
So if you can't communicate with me during an interview, can you communicate with the patient? Right. Can you communicate with the provider? Can you communicate with the nurse?
Right.
So I think being able to sell yourself is such a big aspect of what a residency interview will look like for you.
I like that.
For sure.
I would agree. Because I feel like a lot of our, really any school, but we're talking about pharmacy, a lot of our classmates, or I know it's my classmates, it's like, no shade to them, but they're very book smart. You ask them anything about pharmacy, anything about medicine, they're your go-to person. Mm-hmm. You remove pharmacy and you ask anything about street smarts or social determinants of health, and it tanks.
Yeah.
And I think it's so important to be balanced, because you need to know the book smart.
Yeah.
But it's like, at the end of the day, you're taking care of people. You know, that empathy piece where it's like, okay, everybody isn't privileged with the same circumstances. Everybody doesn't have transportation. Everybody doesn't have access to quality food. Everybody, you know, it just depends. But I think if you can understand that and kind of encompass that all into one patient or into the patient, then it'll help a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And I feel like it helps you meet people where you are. Like, I can educate a middle-aged white man just as much as I can educate a 16-year-old black boy. Like, mm-hmm. it just helps you, like, be flexible in your communication, because mm-hmm. I can do both. Like, I can communicate with both of these people effectively
and
still make sure that they go home and they get their medication. So I feel like that's also important.
I would agree. And I think being a minority, it gives us a little edge. And I say that because, like, I did a patient presentation during gym ed, and it was over Dupixent, like mm-hmm. the skin or whatever. And my sister has eczema. And so I did the presentation. It was mainly for her because it was close to me. Mm-hmm. And when I put the pictures and everything up, obviously I'm the only black person in the room. So I told them, I said, how eczema shows up on y'all doesn't show up on us the same. For y'all, it'll be red. You can see the flakes and all that. It's like, for black people or darker skinned people, it's going to be a darker complaint, almost like hyperpigmentation looking. Mm-hmm. And I think just small stuff like that is important, because in literature, especially medicine, there's very few pictures of minorities. There's very few treatment guidelines geared towards minorities.
Yeah.
A lot of it, and that's simply because of history, but a lot of it is geared towards our white counterparts. And so how something shows up on them or reacts for them is not going to be the same for us. So I think having that extra piece too, where it's like, okay, understanding your patient or demographics and all that, it plays into it too.
Yeah, I agree. And what you said, history, it's perfect sense
yeah.
with the history of everything that's gone on with African Americans in the healthcare field.
Mm-hmm.
and you have guidelines that are based on clinical trials, African-American people do not want to sign up for clinical trials because of that.
Yeah. In the name itself. History. Yeah.
Yeah. Just nobody wants to do that because it literally scares people away because of the history and everything that we've went through, the ski project, things like that.
Yes.
It's hard for there to be guidelines when there's just this inherent distrust. And that's where I think we can come in and say, okay, you can trust me.
Yeah.
Because we do need to participate in clinical trials because we need to know if these medications work in the African-American community.
Exactly. So. And even ones that's on the market today, like some affect us differently than it affects other races. And that's across the board. It's not just black people, white people. That's what we're talking about. But across the board, you know, a lot of that has to do with your genes, which we fully don't understand in the field of medicine completely yet. We're not there yet. But I don't know. Like, it just reacts. Different races react differently to different medications.
Yeah.
But if you are a culturally sensitive practitioner, whether it's pharmacy, dentistry, medicine, nursing, it doesn't really matter. You're able to provide that much better care to your patient.
Yeah.
I've heard some questionable things at work or in classroom, and I'm just like, you're going to be taking care of people. Like, what made you say that? Or, you know, what made you do that? But
yeah, it's hard to transition from a therapy case on paper to an actual person.
There you go. Therapy case, you only got one or two problems.
Yeah.
You're going in person, and oh my God.
Yeah, I think that's another challenging part of residency for me was putting it all together.
Yeah.
Because in a therapy test, they just have diabetes. Mm-hmm. They just have hypertension. They just have high cholesterol.
Mm-hmm.
And then you get to the real world and suddenly you have to take care of a patient with hypertension, diabetes, high cholesterol, low electrolytes, having seizures.
Cataracts, gout. It's just like, oh my God.
And you're like, okay, wait, I never learned how to... No, you can just have diabetes. Like, I don't know how to take care of anything else.
Can we remove that other stuff, please?
Yeah, I just know how to take care of the diabetes. You can only have one problem. That's the therapy exam, just one problem.
Literally.
So, yeah, I think that was another kind of adjustment is learning how to look at the patient holistically.
Yeah, I love that. So, we kind of been giving advice throughout the whole episode, but what's one big piece of advice you want to give? It can be students, it can be residents. What's something that you want to leave the people with?
That's a good question. I'll look at the camera. I would say one piece of advice would be stay true to who you are and stay grounded in your beliefs. I think that has helped me the most throughout my undergrad, throughout pharmacy school, and throughout this year of residency is really just trying to stay true to who I am and not allow like various situations to change me. Because I think that sometimes as healthcare providers, we can be like desensitized to things.
Yep.
Like you can stop having the same empathy because you're like, oh, I see this 100 times. But really staying true to the person that you are and staying grounded in your beliefs, always going back to your why, because I think that when times get hard or when times get difficult, remembering, why did I even come to pharmacy school? Why did I want to be a pharmacist? And what impact did I set out to make? When you remember that, it makes those bad times or those hard times feel a little less for sure. So I would say that's like one piece of advice. And then kind of what Calvin said, be a sponge and soak up everything that you could possibly learn. I have a whole OneNote of all of the things that I've learned through residency. Still keep that same kind of journal mindset, but I just have it electronic. But being a sponge and soaking up all of the knowledge, because at the end of the day, like, you're a learner now, but someday you'll be the teacher. And so kind of remembering that you are a sponge and that you're going to have to pour into somebody else in the future is something I'd want to leave with you.
I love that. And I think just building off of that, like, what's always helped me too is like remaining humble. You know, like, regardless of, you know, you go through undergrad, then you go through pharmacy school, residency maybe, and then you're the actual pharmacist. Some people move up to a professor or admin or whatever. But I think knowing that you're taking care of people, I think empathy, I guess, is the word, where it's like, regardless of your role, like, you're caring for students, you're caring for patients, you're caring for whoever. And in your care, you have the right to determine, is this going to be a good or is this going to be bad?
Yeah.
You know, and even if it's like Micah said, even if it's something that you've seen 100 times, oh, high blood pressure. But it's like, that could be a life or death situation for that patient. How serious you take it is how mm-hmm. serious they're going to take it. If you blow it off, they're going to blow it off, you know? And that could lead to other complications. So really just knowing that every patient you care for, it's a life or death situation. Treat it as if you've never seen them, you've never seen that disease state, and how can you best care for them?
Yeah.
That's helped me a lot.
Yeah. I would also say remember where you came from. I think that people a lot of times get into these positions and they forget where they came from.
Mm-hmm.
You forgot that you were once a student. You forgot that you were once a resident. So remember where you came from when you're dealing with people, and like allow that to like make sure that you have empathy. So really remembering like this was just you 2 years
ago.
So, yeah, I think sometimes people get beside themselves. So remember where you came from. Always be humble, and you'll be fine.
There you go. There you go. I love that. And with that, we're going to thank our special guest for attending today. It's been a great episode. As always, if y'all like it, please like, share, comment, subscribe. And together, let's change the world one soul at a time. Peace. I lost my train of thought, so I'll clip at the end. Okay, 3, 2, 1. Ty, you did that.
Oh, so fun.
We gone.